This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Law and Behold is, of course, our monthly series where we aim to arm Malaysians with constitutional literacy. And the series is done in collaboration with the Malaysian Bar, the University of Malaya's Faculty of Law, and the Malaysian Centre for Constitutionalism and Human Rights. So in March's episode of Law and Behold, we discussed federalism in Malaysia with a special focus on Peninsular Malaysia. This month, we're going to continue that discussion, but we're going to shift our focus to Sabah and Sarawak and discuss if this system of federal governance has worked in East Malaysia, and also what the amendment to the federal constitution in 2022 to recognise the special rights of Sabah and Sarawak has achieved thus far. And joining me for this discussion are Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Haji Shad Salim Faruqi, holder of the Tunku Abdul Rahman Chair at the University of Malaya, and Roger Chin, the President of the Sabah Law Society. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you today?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. So let's get straight to it. Maybe we can start with some background information and sort of revisit the official documents preceding the formation of Malaysia, perhaps. So specifically, there's something that I was reading about. Maybe you can help explain this. What the 20-point memorandum for Sabah and the 18-point memorandum for Sarawak was about. You know, I mean, what were they in response to? And what are the key issues and outcomes that were outlined here?
Let me begin by saying that the creation of Malaysia by the federalization of North Borneo and Sarawak and Singapore into the Federation of Malaya was not, as is often accused, it was not a conquest or a colonization. Actually, there was a fair amount of democratic consultation, negotiation, and bargaining. From 1961 to 1963. The British commenced that in 1961, and then there was a Cobbold Commission appointed in 1962. That this was followed by the IGC, the Intergovernmental Committee, chaired by Lord Lansdowne, on which Tun Razak was the deputy chair. Around this time, August 1962, the 20 points of Sabah, 18 points of Sarawak were set down. They were quite similar. I'll come to that in a few minutes. In 1962, Juliet, there was a general election in North Borneo. And one of the issues was whether North Borneo, that is Sabah, should federate with Malaya. In 1963, there was a GE in Sarawak. And this was, again, one of the issues. Sadly, Philippines and Indonesia objected. And therefore, there was a tripartite summit in Manila in 1963, which agreed to invite the United Nations Secretary General to send a mission. That mission, Secretary General's mission, reported in September. And its report was that the bulk of the people that they interviewed were eager to federate with the Malaya. There was then the Malaysia Agreement in 1963, the Malaysia Act 1963, and actually a enlarged nation of Malaysia was formed on 16 September. Now, coming to Sabah's 20 points and Sarawak's 18 points, they are quite similar, so I'll just cover Sabah's 20 points. The overall thrust was that special treatment was a precondition for constituting Malaysia. Why this special treatment? I think it was because of the geographical size of Sabah and Sarawak. Together, they constitute, just the two of them, constitute 60% of the territorial area of Malaysia. Then, of course, their ethnic and religious uniqueness and the problems of underdevelopment in Sabah, Sarawak. So, looking at the 20 points of Sabah in 1962, not necessarily in order of importance, but in order of the points as they were mentioned. Point number one was about religion. There was to be no official religion in these two states. However, we all know that in Sabah, this was changed during the time of Tun Mustafa. Language, Malay, would be the national language, they agreed. But English should be an official language of North Borneo for all purposes, of North Borneo for all purposes, state or federal, without limitation of time. Mm-hmm. The constitution of Malaya would be accepted, but with necessary changes. And as I mentioned on many, many occasions, actually, out of 181 articles, 87 articles were amended. Out of 13 schedules, 10 were amended, and 35 new articles were added. So the constitution of Malaya was accepted, but with the changes to make it the Malaysian constitution. Immigration, Sabah Sarawak would have control. Borneonization was a condition of joining. So more and more posts should be held by Sabah Sarawakians in Sabah Sarawak.
Mm-hmm.
Citizenship should be on the basis of dus soli, birth, rather than descent from someone born in Sabah Sarawak. Tariffs and finance, this is a big issue, and I'm sure Roger will enlighten us on this. North Borneo should retain control of its own finance, development and tariff and taxation. Special position of the indigenous races. There was this issue. The chief minister should be called the prime minister. Just like in Kashmir at one time, the chief minister was called prime minister. In Northern Ireland, the chief minister was called the prime minister. So Sabah also demanded prime minister, but it was not accepted. Educational system should be under state control in Sabah. No amendment can be made without the consent of the governors of Sabah Sarawak. No amendment to the federal constitution. And as I was mentioning to Roger, I think this was a mistake by the Sabah lawyers, Sabah Sarawak lawyers. They should have asked for the consent of the assembly of Sabah Sarawak rather than the governor of Sabah Sarawak. Representation in federal parliament should not be based purely on population, but also on territory. The head of the state should be called Yang Di Pertua Negara, not Yang Di Pertua Negeri. That was the way it was demanded. Ultimately, the suggestion was accepted for a while, but it was changed. This Negara to Negeri was existing from 63 to 76. But in 76, the head of Sabah Sarawak were named Yang Di Pertua Negeri. Lands, forests, local government would be entirely in Sabah Sarawak hands, unlike in West Malaysia, where actually the land code, the local government act are federal law. So these were, I think, the main provisions. The intention was, as I said earlier, that there should be special treatment. Now, this special treatment, in some respects, is a departure from the idea that all constituent units must be equal, mm-hmm, under Article 8 of the Constitution. But I want to mention this to you. This is not a universally accepted rule. Special autonomy for some regions is not unknown in other nations like India. In India, Kashmir till August 2019, Quebec and Nunavut in Canada, Northern Ireland in the UK, and Corsicans in France are some examples. So I think historically there was a fair amount of bargaining, negotiations to give to Sabah Sarawak a special position in what could be called an asymmetrical arrangement. In other words, all the units are not equal to each other. There is lack of symmetry, asymmetrical. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean it as a condemnation or criticism. As I said, this is quite common in federal systems where the states are unique in their history or in their conditions.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Thank you.
I tell you what, let's go for one quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about how the federal constitution was actually amended to accommodate the demands of Sabah and Sarawak for autonomy. I'm speaking today to Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Haji Syad Salim Faruqi, holder of the Tunku Abdul Rahman Chair, University of Malaya, and Roger Chin, the president of the Sabah Law Society. We're looking at Malaysia's centralized federalism. This is part two. We're focusing on Sabah and Sarawak. We'll be back after this short break. You're listening to Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today are Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Haji Syad Salim Faruqi, holder of the Tunku Abdul Rahman Chair at the University of Malaya, and Roger Chin, the president of the Sabah Law Society. We're discussing Malaysia's centralised federalism with a special focus on Sabah and Sarawak. So, Prof, you know, before the break, you outlined what the 20-point memorandum for Sabah was, what the 18-point memorandum for Sarawak was. I was reading some articles that you've written, and you said that the federal constitution was amended significantly to accommodate the demands of Sabah and Sarawak for autonomy. Can you remind us what these accommodations were?
Yeah, Juliet, every federal system is a division of powers. It's a dual government. So some powers belong to the federal government and some belong to the states or regions or cantons, by whatever name you may call them. In the case of Sabah, Sarawak, Sabah, Sarawak were given special executive powers, special legislative powers, special judicial powers, and very importantly, special financial powers. Mm-hmm. I know things haven't worked out so well in that area, but basically in these four areas, there was special autonomy to recognize their special needs or their distinctiveness. Let me talk about the legislative power. Along with items in the state list, there is a supplementary state list which confers additional lawmaking powers on the Sabah Sarawak assemblies in 8 matters, including native law and custom, ports and harbors, the Sabah Railway, shipping under 15 tons, carried by goods, etc. Mm-hmm. And what is very important is this, that in the matter of land, forestry, local government, in West Malaysia, the federal government has the power to pass uniform laws. That power to have uniform laws does not apply to Sabah, Sarawak. The federal parliament cannot, in the interest of uniformity, pass laws on local government, forestry, and land for Sabah, Sarawak. So in the area of legislative power, Sabah Sarawak assemblies are clearly more powerful. Then in the matter of amending the constitution, the federal parliament has virtual monopoly about amending the federal constitution. The West Malaysian states have no say in the amendment process. The best example of that is this, that when Malaya was to enlarge to Malaysia, Kelantan insisted that its consent must be obtained to convert Malaya to Malaysia. Kelantan went to the courts and lost because the court said under Article 159, you have no right to be consulted. Mm. However, when it comes to amendments to the constitution affecting the rights of Sabah, Sarawak, the consent of the governors must be obtained. In the matter of Islam in Sabah, Sarawak, there was to be no state religion. And if financial support is given for Islamic religion in Sabah, Sarawak, the consent of the state governor must be obtained, and an equivalent amount will be allocated for social welfare in these states. Then propagation of other religions to Muslims, if that law were to be passed in Sabah, Sarawak, it should be passed with a 2/3 majority. Unlike in West Malaysia, where actually Article 11, Clause 4, forbids the preaching of any religion to Muslims. Native courts were to exist. Sabah Sarawak were to have a high court of their own. Appointment of the chief judge of Sabah Sarawak requires consultation with the chief minister of these states. Judicial commissioners were to be appointed by the governor on the advice of the Chief Justice. I'm afraid that power was later on transferred to the Yang di Pertuan Agong. representation in the Dewan Raya would not be purely on population basis, but would take note of their territory. Even during an emergency, native law custom cannot be violated by the federal government. Development plans in West Malaysia, the federal government can interfere with the states on the ground that it is part of development. But these development plans of the federal government cannot apply in Sabah, Sarawak. Then fiscal federalism. We all agree money represents power. And the federal government's stranglehold over most of the lucrative sources of revenue is not as strong in relation to Sabah, Sarawak. There are actually about 14 items of special revenue. Just one could be mentioned, and later on, Roger could help me on that. Under Article 112C, Sabah is to receive 40% of the net revenue that the federal government earns from Sabah. So this 40%, two-fifths, this is very controversial. And I know it's quite complex, but I just want to make this point that there were special sources of revenue for Sabah, Sarawak. That the natives of Sabah, Sarawak are on par with the Malays of West Malaysia for purposes of Article 153. Immigration control is allowed. And I know lawyers in West Malaysia will complain to Roger. Lawyers from West Malaysia cannot practice in Sabah, Sarawak. But Sabah, Sarawak, Rogers can practice in West Malaysia. I'm just joking, Roger. English and native languages are to be allowed in Sabah, Sarawak. Malay reserves under Article 89 do not apply in Sabah, Sarawak. And finally, very fascinatingly, the Sabah Assembly, I think, is the only assembly allowed to have 6 appointed members in addition to 48 elected. So clearly, in the legislative field, executive field, judicial field, financial field, Sabah, Sarawak had greater power than the 11 West Malayan states.
Mm-hmm. But I think, as you've pointed out as well before, that regrettably, not everything actually worked out that well. And Sabah and Sarawak, Roger, jump in if you want to as well, suffered loss of some of their special 1963 rights. Prof, maybe you want to help elaborate?
Yeah, sure. Actually, in the legal area, in the financial area, in the cultural area, in the political area, Sabah, Sarawak have suffered some setbacks in that their rights have either not been recognized, or if recognized, have not been enforced. For example, there is tremendous discontent about inequitable sharing of resources and lack of what is called fiscal federalism. Mm-hmm. Sabah, Sarawak have not received the mandatory financial allocations that are due to it under the 1963 provisions. Time doesn't permit, Juliet, but there are, in my view, 14 separate mandatory provisions of special revenue for Sabah, Sarawak. And some of these have not been received, especially that 40% of the net revenue derived by the federation from the state. Basically, the arrangement for Sabah was this. Once the federation expands to cover Sabah, Sarawak, the federal revenue will rise. Whatever the federal government earns from Sabah, 60% it can keep, 40% it must give back. So that's the two-fifths of 40%. And there's a lot of dispute about that. So there's also unhappiness about the 5% oil royalty, but that's a very complicated matter. Amendments to the federal constitution, as I mentioned earlier, should not be done except with the consent. But I'm sorry to report to you that when it came to appointment of judicial commissioners, the power was transferred from the governor to the Yang Di Pertuan Agong, mm-hmm. and from the chief judge of Sabah to the chief justice. In Robert Lingi versus Government of Malaysia 2011, the matter was challenged. And most disappointingly, the federal court said, no, the federal government has the power to make this change. I don't agree with that decision. Borneoization is not taking place rapidly enough. I know in 1963, Sabah, Sarawak were short of expertise in many areas, but I think that has changed. And there is no real justification for top posts in the police or army or in the civil service, immigration, customs, national registration department, not to be held by Sabah Sarawakians. Sabah Sarawak have rights over immigration, but the naturalization of millions of illegal immigrants into Sabah has negated the rights of Sabah Sarawak over immigration. So Sabah Sarawak have a right to control who enters, but if somebody illegally entered and was given citizenship, then he's a citizen. And Sabah Sarawak now actually have no rights over him. Islamization is a sore point. The native non-Islamic character of Sabah and Sarawak has been diluted over the years. Constitution has been amended. Issues like Kalima Allah, Bibles and Bahasa Melayu, these have been poisoning the atmosphere. Federal control over politics, despite the autonomy of the states in prescribed areas, the federal government controls political and administrative processes in Sabah, Sarawak. The federal government manipulated the political processes to remove popularly elected chief ministers in Sarawak in 1966, in Sabah in 1994, and I think in 2020. Then representation in Dewan Rakyat has gone down after Singapore left. While Singapore was in, Sabah Sarawak, Singapore had 35% of the seats. What's the significance of 35? The significance is that a constitutional amendment requires 2/3 majority. Right. And the 35% could have vetoed the amendment. Right. Now Sabah Sarawak have only 25% of the seats. And finally, there is dispute. It may not be a major issue, but there's dispute about the nation's age. Is the nation 65 years old or is it 58 years old? And I think in many areas, Sabah Sarawak feel they were marginalized. For example, there are scores of native groups in Sabah Sarawak, but the Borang used to say others. Mm-hmm. So for West Malaysia, it's Malay, Chinese, Indians, and then there is this item others. Others used to cover. I think that was unintentional, but it is insulting not to recognize. In fact, in terms of population, Sabah is one of the most heavily populated states of the Federation. So I think these are some of the grievances. I think they are genuine. And I personally think leaders in West Malaysia should not only open their ears, but also open their hearts to the legitimate grievances of Sabah Sarawak and to enforce the constitutional rights given in 1963.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the discontent seems to be growing, isn't it?
Yes, indeed it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think we heard a former deputy chief minister of Sabah recently claiming that a majority of East Malaysians want Sabah and Sarawak to secede from Malaysia. So it is continuously growing. I just want to shift into something else. This is about petroleum. So under the Petroleum Development Act, PDA 1974, all states give up their rights to petroleum resources found within their states. What does that mean exactly, Prof, if you want to take that?
Yeah, actually, my view here will be very contentious, very unpopular. You said all states give up their rights. I have constitutional objection to that, Juliet, because... All oil and oil fields are in federal hands under Schedule 9, List 1, Item 8, brackets J. It says specifically. But I think the argument on the other side is, land is in state hands. And therefore, anything found on the land or under the land or over the land is also ours. No, I'm afraid we can't argue like that, because in Item 8J, of List 1, oil and oil fields are in federal hands. But Sabah Sarawak in List 2 and in Schedule 10, Sabah Sarawak actually have rights over permits and licenses for prospecting for mines. They have rights over import duty and excise duty on petroleum products. They have royalty on any mineral. And I understand in 2020, it was 1.136 billion of royalty on minerals. Then, of course, they have rights over state sales tax. So petroleum was always a federal matter since 1963. And therefore, the Petroleum Development Act between the federal statutory authority and the states by contract has arrangements of a 5% royalty. And I know it is a very contentious issue. I am fully prepared to recommend that this 5% should be renegotiated. But you use the word, the rights of the states were given away or negotiated. I'm afraid on oil and oil fields, states had limited rights only over permits and licenses and not over the oil itself.
Okay. All right. Okay. Roger, maybe you can help me with this. The government has gazetted Federal Constitution Review of Special Grant under Article 112D, State of Sabah, Order 2022 on the 20th of April. So very, very recently, right? And the order specifies that the federal government will pay to Sabah the grants in amount of RM 125.6 million, RM 129.7 million, RM 133.8 million, RM 138.1 million, and RM 142.6 million for the financial years of 2022, 23, 24, 25, and 26, respectively, right? And according to the Prime Minister, these sums are agreed by the federal and state governments. Under Article 112D6 of the Constitution, if the federal and state governments failed to reach a consensus on the special grants, the matter shall be referred to an independent assessor. Could you explain the mechanism under Article 112D for us, please?
Sure, Juliet. So maybe if I can start by moving one step back and explaining the whole thing about special grants and how 112D actually interacts with all of this. So Sabah has some special grants, which are basically divided into Claim A and Claim B. As for Claim A, Article 112C bracket 1 of the Federal Constitution basically stipulates that Sabah is to receive under Part 4, 10th Schedule, yearly grants of 40% of the amount by which the net revenue derived by the Federation from Sabah exceeds the net revenue which would have been derived in 1963, had the Malaysian Act been in operation. And that has been succinctly explained by Prof. Just now.
Right.
So what is net revenue? Net revenue means the revenue that accrues to the Federation, less any amounts assigned out of such revenue to the state under Part 3 or Part 5. Now, net revenue includes income tax, petroleum income tax, import, export and excise duties, goods and services tax, and dividends from Petronas. And now, what it should cover is also revenues that are indirectly derived from Sabah. For example, income tax paid in Kuala Lumpur or West Malaysia by corporations with operations in Sabah, and Petronas dividends ultimately derived from operations in Sabah. That would be what, if you ask the Sabahan, includes.
Mm-hmm.
And in Part B, two parts I said just now, under Part 5, 10th Schedule, all proceeds from the taxes, fees and dues so far as collected, levied or raised within the states. What is this? This basically includes import and excise duties on petroleum products, export duty on timber and forest produce, so long as royalties levied by Sabah on mineral oils, and that does not amount to 10% ad valorem calculated as for export duty, such as part of export duties as makes a total of royalty and duty on exported minerals up to 10% ad valorem. Now, how does this all tie in with 112D? So you have now seen under 112C, which is the special grant given to Sabah. Of course, Sarawak is inside there, but for purposes of where I'm talking from, I'll just mention Sabah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Basically, 112D just says this. There shall be a review of the special grants which were given in 112C made to Sabah and Sarawak for the periods beginning 1969 1974, and thereafter at such time as the government of the Federation or the government of the state may require. So you see here, 1969 and 1974 are 2 5-year periods. So basically, the 40% revenue sharing grant is to be reviewed jointly, and I stress this point, between the federal and state governments under Article 112D. The two articles work hand in hand, and there is no amendment or deletion of the federal constitution required for the revenue sharing of the 40% revenue sharing to be reviewed under Article 112D. Now, again, like I said, Article 112D makes it very clear that reviews are to be conducted between the federal government and Sabah state government jointly, and it can never be unilaterally. You cannot, unfortunately, have what Tengku Zafrul said unilaterally, that the 40% now is, the 40% now has been replaced by another formula and not the 40% formula under 112D. That was unilateral. That was said by him himself. Mm. The state, as you would have known in the past week's statements, have said that, no, they are still discussing on the basis of 40% revenue. And where it says, if any of the reviews and the federal and the state governments are unable to reach an agreement on any matter, it would then be referred to an independent assessor, and his recommendations shall be binding on the government's concern and shall be given effect as if it were the agreement of those governments. Now, what is important to note is this. Right from the outset, I think the 40% revenue sharing formula should always be taken as the starting point for any review negotiations. Why do I say this? Very simply put, when you enter into review negotiations, you cannot pluck figures from the sky. You cannot one be saying 1 ringgit, the other one saying 20 billion ringgit, as an example. Mm-hmm. That would be nonsensical. So it must be grounded by some parameters and some guidance. And the only guidance available, like I said, is 112C, which is the 40% revenue. So under any review negotiations that goes on, obviously the 40% has to be the starting point for any reviews that go on under 112D. Now, what is very interesting, and I would like to put it out there and put this point across as well, is what happens if they can't agree and it goes to the independent assessor? What is the independent assessor to do? Mm. How is the independent assessor going to arrive at that figure? Again, I would posit that it must be based on the 40% as a start. Again, the independent assessor will have nothing else to guide him except for the 40%. So imagine it, if you may, as a terms and conditions which sets out how far the independent assessor can go in deciding or how to go about deciding this amount, this review figure. And it cannot be done in a vacuum. It must be done guided by the 40% as posited in 112C. So I'd like to put it out there that it is entirely wrong to say that the 40% has been replaced. It has not been replaced. It must always be the starting point for any form of negotiations. And it can be higher or it can be lower when you finally arrive at the reviewed figure. But regardless, you must start at the 40% value in any review negotiations. Thank you, Julia.
Okay. All right. Prof, did you want... Yes, go ahead, Prof.
Yeah, I wanted to add a point there. I agree with everything Roger has said. I just want to mention this, that I'm fascinated by the press statements attributed to the PM that the two governments have agreed to this new arrangement. I wanted to add the constitutional point. Even if the two governments have agreed, that is not sufficient. There must be an order by the Yang Di Pertuan Agong. And that order must be gazetted to record the agreement. That's Article 112D, Clause 1. May I read to you? If the two governments, federal and state governments, have agreed on something, then by order of the Yang Di Pertuanagong, as may be necessary to give effect to the agreement, any agreement must have the order of the Yang Di Pertuanagong.
Okay.
So I'm just asking, I do not know the answer. Was there such an order by the Yang Di Pertuanagong? Was it gazetted? And if that is so, then that is proof that the two parties, the federal and the states, had agreed. So that's, I just wanted to add that point. And I totally agree with Roger that if there is no agreement, then the independent assessor comes in and his decision will be binding. He's not required to consult with the National Financial Council. So that will be binding. But no assessor has been appointed. I also wish to point out, that's my final point, this, the Constitution clearly envisaged that the 40% baseline may be reviewed every 5 years. But there is a procedure that is prescribed, and I'm afraid that procedure seems not to have been followed.
Okay. All right. Let's just go for one more quick break, gentlemen. When we come back, let's discuss those recent amendments to the federal constitution with regard to Sabah and Sarawak, of course. I'm speaking today to Professor Shad and Roger Chin. It's another episode of Law and Behold. Keep it right here on BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. With me today are Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Haji Shad Salim Faruqi, holder of the Tunku Abdul Rahman Chair at the University of Malaya, and Roger Chin, the President of the Sabah Law Society. We are tackling Malaysia's centralised federalism with a focus on Sabah and Sarawak today. And just to sort of move on to the amendments, the recent amendments to four articles of the Federal Constitution, and this was relating to the rights of Sabah, Sarawak. We know those were unanimously passed by the Dewan Rakyat last year in December, came into force in early February of this year. What were these amendments in relation to? Roger, you want to take this one?
Yes, sure. So on 14th of December 2021, Parliament basically approved the Constitution Amendment Act, reinstating the Borneo states to what it was when the federal constitution was first formulated following the Malaysia Agreement in 1963 and the Malaysia Act 1963, by amending Article 1, Bracket 2, whilst at the same time also amending Article 160, Bracket 2. Now, let me just say, the original constitutional provisions provided for three separate components to the formation of Malaysia, and each of the components formed separate and distinct units of its own, as reflected in the Cobalt Commission's recommendations. At this juncture, I must state that the original constitutional provisions in Article 1, Bracket 2, provided basically as follows. The states of the Federation shall be A, the states of Malaya, namely Johor, Kedah, Kelantan, Malacca, Negeri Sembilan, Pahang, Penang, Perak, Perlis, Selangor, and Terengganu, and B, the Borneo states, namely Sabah and Sarawak, and C, the state of Singapore. Yeah. The territories, and the part three says that the territories of each of the states mentioned in clause two are the territories comprised therein immediately before the Malaysia date. Now, when Singapore left, the constitution was amended and to remove Singapore. However, Article 1, Bracket 2, A and B remained intact. Subsequently, in 1976, the 1976 amendments basically reduced the Borneo states to one of the states of Malaya. The constitutionality of the 1976 amendment has always been a bone of contention, whether or not other provisions of the federal constitution was complied with, in specifically Article 159 and 161E. However, with this present amendment being approved and passed, that is now academic. So now, basically, the amendment to Article 161 is basically long-awaited. And whilst the definition of Malaysia, as set out in the amendment, is of course a mouthful, it nevertheless sets out historical narration as far as formation of Malaysia is concerned. Some may argue that the amendments to Article 1, Bracket 2 is form over substance. However, I'd like to say it nevertheless has reinstated the original intent of and spirit of MA63. Mm-hmm. This is a rebooting of that very spirit and enthusiasm that prevailed in 1963. And it is hoped, obviously, that with this, we will be able to build and revisit and review and recalibrate the relationships between the Borneo states and the states of Malaya. Now, on this issue of equal partnership, it is simply this. I know whenever I speak to a lot of my Malayan friends, they don't quite grasp this thing of equal partnership. So simply put, it is this. It is believed when British and Malaya first conceived the idea of Malaysia, it was based on the position that each of the component parties are to be treated as equal partners. So that is, Malaya, Singapore, Sabah and Sarawak are equal in all respects vis-a-vis the formation of Malaysia. So it was always intended at the very beginning for all of these component parties to come together and create a new nation in the name of Malaysia. However, along the way, both the British and Malaya changed course, and instead of creating a brand new nation, the Borneo territories were merely succeeded to the Federation of Malaya, and there was a name change from Malaya to Malaysia. So the term equal partners is intended to be that the parties are meant to be equal, as I said, in status and nature. Mm-hmm. It therefore follows that the amendments to Article 1 of the Constitution basically returns it to that position. And lastly, Article 160 bracket 2 was also amended to redefine the term the Federation. The present definition says the Federation means the Federation established under Federation of Malaya Agreement 1957. Mm-hmm. The new definition rightfully acknowledges that both the 1957 and the 1963 Federation agreements. Now, why is this significant? This recognition is significant because it breathes constitutional status into Malaysia Agreement 1963.
Yeah.
And although it will take some time to work out the implications of this amendment, no doubt it certainly will have profound implications. It will take time. However, by putting MA63 inside the federal constitution, a lot of the aspirations of MA63 now has a possibility of being made very much so into law.
Okay. And Prof, what about you? How do you feel? Are these constitutional changes enough to affect change?
Yes, actually, this is something to be worked out in the future. I agree with Roger that the implications are profound, especially the amendment to Article 160, Clause 2, to redefine the term federation. The present definition says federation means the federation established under the Federation of Malaya Agreement 57. The new definition says that the federation means the federation established in 1957, and the federation established under the Malaysia Agreement 1963. Now, the Malaysia Agreement 1963 refers to the IGC, Intergovernmental Committee Report. So to me, the massive implication of this amendment to 160 Clause 2 is that the MA63, which was primarily an international agreement, and the IGC, which was an international agreement, have now been given a kiss of life by the Constitution. They have been constitutionalized. Now, the real implications of reading Sabah Sarawak's position in the light of MA63 and the IGC, the implications are massive. We have to work them out.
Okay. And Roger, maybe if I can ask you, what sentiments are being shared by Sabahans with regard to this new gazettement? I mean, we know that the Sabah Chief Minister said that while they welcome the increase in special grants, negotiations were still ongoing to get the 40% revenue owed, as stated in the Malaysia Agreement 1963. I mean, basically, are Sabahans happy?
Sadly, Sabahans are not happy. Why? Yeah. You must recall that the only review prior to the recent gazettement was actually, which was specifically stated to be from January 1st, 1969 to January 1st, 1974. That was the only ever review done up to recently.
Okay.
I said, so since then, nothing has happened until recently. So the second review, which was meant to happen in 1974, is basically 48 years late. Now, being 48 years late, what happens to all that arrears? Obviously, there are arrears. Mm-hmm. What happens to all of that arrears from way back then? And how much exactly is the arrears? So these are two very important points that needs to be addressed. And that is one of the main reasons why Sabahans are far from happy. And of course, it doesn't help when federal politicians, for example, Tengku Zafro, says that the 40% revenue sharing formula with Sabah is no longer applicable following a new agreement between Sabah and the federal government in 1969. Like I said earlier on, reviews are meant to be mutually agreed upon and not decided by one person alone. However, that statement seems to imply that it is made by one party alone. Mm. There is, again, absolutely no reason why the original 40% revenue sharing formula cannot be used and should be used in arriving at not only the new review amount, as well as also the arrears that was meant to happen from 1974 until today.
Sure.
I'll use today as the point when the new review happened. So it should always be that. And I think Sabahans will only be happy when that 40% is used as the starting point for any review. Because you must note, this new thing of 126 million per year under the new review is based on nothing. Nobody has said what it's based on. And the short answer to that is, it is based on nothing. It is a percentage of goodness knows what, right? I'm made to understand that figure was actually made available, put on the table, and it was, do you want it now? The Sabah government, I'm happy to say, Prof, have grown a lot smarter since back then, and we're no longer giving up rights anymore. So what we said was basically, okay, we'll take the money that you're offering to us. However, without prejudice to us going back for the arrears, as well as what's going forward, because we do not agree this 126 million replaces the 40%. We are still wanting the 40%. So we'll take this up now, but we are still continuing to negotiate. So this time around, I'm very grateful to say we have finally grown a lot of brains, and we are much happier because of that, but far from happy.
Far from happy. Very pragmatic, though, the decision that was made, but yes, far from happy. Okay, gentlemen, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but any concluding messages that you'd like to leave our listeners with, Prof or Roger, anything at all?
Well, I want to hope and pray that this federation will survive, it will grow stronger. And I think the only way to do that is to revive the spirit of accommodation and tolerance and recognition of diversity and if desire for inclusiveness that actually inspired our forefathers in 1963. I think we have to recapture that spirit so that this federation can grow strong or stronger. I just want to end by saying tensions are inherent in every federal system because there is dual government. In fact, not dual. At the state level, there may be 25 governments in some federal system. In the USA, there are 50 governments. So tensions are inherent. But these tensions should not be allowed to go out of control. And the best way to do that is to listen to each other, not only with our open ears, but with open hearts. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Prof. Roger, anything you'd like to conclude with?
Yes, I'd just like to emphasize at this point that basically the federal government must be transparent in making information available to the Sabah state government in order for all the factors to be considered in arriving at any review amount. Mm-hmm. You must recall that at all points in time, A lot of the data is not available. How much taxes is being collected by federal government? That information is not made readily available. And the Official Secrets Act, a terrible, terrible thing, blocks a lot of information from being provided. So I would like to stress that if there is any genuine intention to try to arrive at a mutually agreeable review figure, the federal government must be transparent in sharing information. There can be no doubt that the infrastructure and economic development of Sabah is not on par with Peninsular Malaysia. And Sabah is obviously the best party to decide on how to use the revenue that is derived from Sabah. So it is not wrong to give what is entitled to Sabah, the 40% of the revenue derived from Sabah to Sabah, for Sabah to use. And I would like to end with that. Thank you very much, Juliet.
Okay. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Haji Shad Salim Farooqi, holder of the Tunku Abdul Rahman Chair at the University of Malaya, and Roger Chin, the President of the Sabah Law Society. We were looking at Malaysia Centralised Federalism, focus on Sabah and Sarawak. If you miss any part of our conversation today, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.